It's May 24th, 2006, and welcome to A Gardener's Notebook. I'm Douglas E. Welch, coming to you from Van Nuys, California, located in the sunny San Fernando Valley just north of Los Angeles. I'd love to hear what's going on in your garden. You can write to me directly at agn@welchwrite.com, or you can leave comments on the website. Flickr users, be sure to check out our new Flickr group. You can find us in Flickr directly, or also find the link on the website. If you enjoy A Gardener's Notebook, please consider a vote on Podcast Alley at podcastalley.com, or a review in the iTunes podcast directory. It's been a busy couple of weeks here in the garden. Back on the 13th, my son had his first communion, and so we had some close friends and family over after the ceremony for a small party in the garden. One of the most interesting things my wife noticed over the course of the event was that we both had figured that people would walk into the garden now that the new wall and the new parking garage has been built and would immediately make comment about how ugly it was or how imposing or any number of other comments. What we found, though, was no one seemed to notice. Really caught us by surprise. Of course, we've been living with it for the last several weeks and have yet to come to grips with it. But these people hadn't been in the garden in, perhaps a few weeks or even a few months, and were so intrigued with the party and what was growing in the garden that they didn't even notice. Who would have thought? I'd meant to take a few moments during the party and record some audio, perhaps comments with the guests and family and such about the garden, but of course, as parties often go, we were otherwise occupied, refilling the ice chest, refilling the snacks, putting out the food. I hope in the future, perhaps for our summer party or what will probably be our more fall party this year, I'll be able to give you some music from the garden. We always sit around under the trellis and all of my musician friends get together and play music. So I'll bring you a little bit of that and also maybe some comments from the guests. If you're subscribed to the podcast or read the website regularly, you'll notice that yesterday, on Tuesday, the 23rd, I actually posted a short video showing some rust on one of my roses, explaining what it was and giving some basic care instructions. I hope you like these little video snippets that I put out there. I try to make them fun as well as informative, or sometimes just fun in the case of the weeding one I put out the other day. By the way, I still need to do some more weeding out in the front garden. If you do like them, let me know. Also, send me your questions. I don't profess to be an expert in gardening. Oh, please, anything but that. I consider A Gardener's Notebook more of a, hey, come join me in my garden and we'll figure it out together. Right after I took the video of the rust yesterday, I made sure to trim the rose all the way back, took off all the diseased leaves I could find, throwing them all away. Don't want to put those in the compost bin, as I said in the video. The fungal spores can actually survive even a really hot compost pile, and mine is anything but hot. It tends to lumber along rather than race, that's for sure. The same goes for black spot, which I actually get more frequently here in the garden. You don't want to put that in the compost pile either. It is a fungus as well, and it can survive in the pile, and you end up spreading it around the garden when you spread the compost. As with everything these days, you can find more information than you ever thought you'd need about rust, black spot, and other garden diseases by doing a simple Google search. Agricultural departments all around the country, and even in other countries, are more than happy to provide you all sorts of information on diseases like this. You'll also find on the website, and also on Flickr, some pictures of my amaryllis that are coming up in the one bed along the south fence in the back garden. Once again, I can't take any credit for these amaryllis at all. They were planted here by the previous owners and reliably return every year about this time. They're actually very pretty, much different from the kind of striking scarlet amaryllis that I'm used to from back in my childhood in Ohio. These are, probably best described as candy striped. They're kind of white to pink with dark red stripes. They don't last too long, maybe a week or so for each bloom, but they're a pleasant accent along that bed, which is mainly filled with shrubs rather than flowers. I do get a few hibiscus blooms, although they probably don't get as much sun as they would like. But another reliable bloomer, and much more appreciated for its scent than anything else, is the gardenia bush at the end of the line. You can always tell when the gardenia is blooming because you walk out into the garden and it's an unmistakable fragrance. We always try to bring a few blooms into the house, and one bloom in any part of the house will easily perfume the entire house. I've actually got to be a little bit careful because I've found that the scent is so strong it can actually cause me a bit of hay fever or an allergic reaction where my nose starts to plug up. I do like the smell though, so I try to keep it in the house even if it is at a distance. My longtime friend Liam recently donated a box of caladium bulbs that he had and couldn't use. So the other day, Joseph and I found a bed that was really blank. It had had a rose in it at one point, and it had a few other things in it at one point, but basically it was just bare dirt right outside the kitchen window along the driveway. Not the greatest spot, and could probably use a little bit of something to spruce it up. So we spaded up the bed, probably better than I would normally do. I'm not known as the best soil preparation person in the world, but we worked it down pretty well, and thankfully the previous owners had made sure that the beds themselves usually contain some pretty good soil. So we worked it all up, put the bulbs in the ground, and watered it in, and we've been kind of waiting over the last several weeks. Just the other day, we saw one fairly substantial sprout starting to come up and thought, okay, great, now things are really going to start to move here. Of course, I walked out this morning and found the stem chewed off. And I look a bit to the right and, well, look, there's a whole bulb ripped out of the ground and several gnawing tooth marks in the side of it. Of course, I knew immediately the friendly squirrels who inhabit our garden as well had decided to dig one of these up, and of course they picked the one that had just started to push up. I don't normally have a problem with the squirrels in the garden. They've never really been known to dig up bulbs or damage anything else. I'm sure that since these bulbs weren't planted as deeply as perhaps a tulip bulb or a daffodil bulb, plus the fact that we'd worked the soil new, plus we probably turned up some peanuts that had been buried there by the squirrels or by the scrub jays in the past, so it was significantly attractive enough to them that, of course, they found the juicy little bulbs and went to work. I plan on putting a little more feed in the bird feeders this week, which the squirrels can currently get into, although I'm hoping to go over to a store where my friend works and remedy that tomorrow. I hope that by feeding them a little bit more, perhaps they won't be so inclined to dig through the rest of the bulbs in the bed. There are quite a few in there, we just haven't seen evidence of any of the other ones coming up yet. Fingers crossed, I don't want to have to put a big wire cage around the bed while the rest of them come up, but I actually have some hardware cloth that I was holding to make a compost sifter out of, and if needs be, I guess I can throw something together and toss over the bed to keep the more curious ones out. You're listening to A Gardener's Notebook, WelchWrite.com, with Douglas E. Welch. Came across another interesting book this week at the library. The title is 100 Easy-to-Grow Native Plants for American Gardens in Temperate Zones. The author is Lorraine Johnson, with photographs by Andrew, and please forgive me, Andrew, for the last name, Lairly, I believe. Now, while this book isn't particular to California, and we do have some very specific needs here in California, what it did give me was some great ideas for native plants to look for in California natives. I have this very dry, woodland back garden, which unfortunately refuses to grow nearly anything beneath all the trees that are there. We've got a few hardy things that have worked there. There's an Andina heavenly bamboo. There is one sword fern that has survived out of four or five, which I planted back there. In fact, that sword fern is actually throwing off new fiddleheads this week, which I really hadn't noticed before. It must have been doing it, but it seems to be doing it quite robustly this year. So what I was looking for was different types of shade ground covers, something I could put in that would fill in large areas Then I could put in a few other accent plants to kind of pop up for their short term each year, but that the main bones would, the main ground covers would cover over the bare dirt. This book's given me a lot of great ideas. What I'm going to have to do now is take some of the ideas that the book gives and go to my local native garden nursery. And we're very lucky to have a group called the Theodore Payne Foundation right here in the San Fernando Valley, in fact, which focuses entirely on California native plants. You may have seen the short video I did with some of the people from the Theodore Payne Foundation. It's been in the podcast feed, or you can also find it on the website. It's a great resource for all things native. They have a wonderful transplant nursery with transplantable native plants, and they also have a huge seed bank. So if you're looking for plants for a meadow or for an otherwise native garden, they provide a great service here in California. I like the book a lot because, along with the common name for each plant and the Latin name, it also provided information on height, when it blooms, for how long, what exposure it needed, which was very important to me. Was it a shade plant? Was it a sun plant? The type of moisture it needed, damp, dry, whatever. What type of habitat? Did it like growing in a woodland environment? Did it want wide open spaces? Did it want a meadow? And also the range, where you could conceivably grow this plant within the continental United States. So if you get a chance, and your local library has it, or perhaps you can even purchase it at your local bookstore, the book again is 100 Easy to Grow Native Plants for American Gardens in Temperate Zones by Lorraine Johnson. And as with everything else during the podcast, there will be a link on the website, probably to Amazon.com. By the way, if you do purchase via one of my Amazon.com links, I do get a small percentage from Amazon, and every little bit helps, so thanks in advance. We had a very unseasonable rainstorm just a couple of days ago, rained all night and most of the next day, which is very odd for May in Southern California. Usually I would expect back in April we'd get our final storm, and in drought years that perhaps even happens as early as February. But for whatever reason, the weather patterns are such, we've had a very cool and damp spring this year, and it'll probably be ending soon. We had a few weeks just before this where the temperatures started to rise up into the typical summer area. This has caused all the foliage from the daffodils and other bulbs in the garden to finally brown up enough that it will soon be time to clean that up and neaten up those beds in the garden. Now that we've probably seen this last rain for the season, I have some irrigation projects, which I've mentioned before, that I need to get on right away. Here during the summer, unless you have a totally xeriscaped garden, which unfortunately I don't have, even though I do have many well-established plants that really don't need much extra water, but the roses and other flowering plants and perhaps the azaleas in the front garden do need a little extra water during the summer, just to keep going and not look scraggly. So I do try to give that to them, although we really have conserved on water over the 10 years we've lived here in the garden. We've discovered what the plants need and what they don't need, and we really try to stick to that pretty well. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this week I set up a group on Flickr. This is somewhat of a public-private group on Flickr, in that anyone can view the photos, but only those people who are invited can actually post photos to the group. I thought this was an excellent idea. I've been using Flickr a little bit over the last several months. Started to get into it a little bit in watching the Gardening for Fun group that's currently there, and I often add my photos to that group as well. But if you'd like to share your photos with other readers and listeners of A Gardener's Notebook, go ahead and send me an email to agn@welltright.com. Tell me that you're a reader or a listener, and I'll send you an invite to the Flickr group so that you can begin posting your own photos there. Otherwise, you're more than welcome to look at all the photos that will start to get up there. There's also a small discussion group associated with the picture group, so we can have some basic discussions over there as well. You'll find a link, of course, on the website that'll take you directly to the Flickr group so you can check it out. And with that, it brings us to the end of another Gardener's Notebook. I hope you enjoyed it. I'd love to hear what's going on in your garden. Please send me email at agn@welchrite.com or visit the website at welchrite.com/AGN. Music for today's podcast provided by The Woodshedders, a.k.a. The Hot Club of West Virginia. You can find out more about them at music.podshow.com. Until next time, in your garden, keep smiling, keep digging, and be well.